It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed, it is hump day. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. All of our show recaps are there, as well as our podcasts and our op-eds. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. We'd appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website as well. It is Wednesday. You've made it. It's hump day. And we've got an important show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines. In this first segment, second segment, we'll talk with John Kellner. He is the district attorney candidate for Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. These races, my friends, are so important for our community safety. You know, we never dreamed that we would see what is happening in many of our communities these days, and so these races are so important. And then in this third and fourth segment, we'll talk with Sally Pipes. She is the president and CEO and the Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Pacific Research Institute, a San Francisco-based think tank that was founded back in 1979. And there are several things we'll talk with her about, but a couple of op-eds that she's recently had is the coronavirus lockdown, how many were harmed with the disruption in medical care? And also, she said that Trump is not giving up on an Obamacare repeal. And of course, what could be put in that place? And so we'll chat with her in the third and fourth segment. As we look at these issues, we look at them as Rudyard Kipling, who wrote The Jungle Book. He says, I keep six honest-serving men. They taught me all I knew. And these are the questions we need to ask is what and why and when and how and where and who. And we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And that's why we do this show, is to help you become better informed on those issues out there. Always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and also to each of you listeners. You're treasured, you're valued. I love hearing from you. Strive for excellence today. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. So producer Steve, how are you doing on this hump day?
Well, as you're talking here, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, wow, you're stimulating so many different things that I could choose to talk about here, so I'm just kind of overflowing.
Okay.
We need to find who's an expert on George Soros?
Probably David Horowitz.
Okay. You talked about John Kellner coming up here, and we always usually include in this discussion the fact that Soros is the weasel that he is. He's out there contributing money for these DA races, usually the opposition or always the opposition. I just read the other day where if he gave, I think they're quoting $20 million in the 2016 general election, he's doubling up. He's going, moving up to $40 million. So it just gets my blood pressure. I got to stop doing this show. My blood pressure is just not handling it.
Well, you know, you and I talk about it all the time. If you weren't doing this show, I think your blood pressure would really be going crazy because you'd be wanting to be in the fight. And you know that every day we're engaging in this battle of ideas out there, bringing forth this information. And so you can't not do this show because of your blood pressure, Steve.
I think there's some background bias there, but go ahead.
There probably is. I was trying to think about quotes for today, and I was thinking about healthcare since we were talking with Sally, and I didn't quite know where to go, and so I went to Mother Teresa, because, you know, certainly she helped the sick and the dying in India. But this quote for today I thought was really important, given all this mask wearing that we have going on. And she says, every time you smile at someone, it is an action of love. a gift to that person, a beautiful thing. And Mother Teresa, she was honored in the Catholic Church as St. Teresa of Calcutta. She was an Albanian, Indian, Roman Catholic nun and missionary. She was born in Skopje, I think it is, then part of the Kosovo Vilayet of the Ottoman Empire. And after living there for 18 years, she moved to Ireland and then to India, where she lived for most of her life. And again, every time you smile at someone, it is an action of love, a gift to that person, a beautiful thing.
Dare we talk about the value of the quotes that you come up with in terms of something you had shared with me yesterday, how much they really do mean to people?
Yeah, we heard from a listener yesterday who said that she really appreciated these quotes. And she gave me one that we're going to use one of these days, maybe when Karen's on, building or something like that. But these quotes really are important. And, you know, people don't do that so much anymore. And so this one is I think, really important. Because how many times have you gone in someplace and somebody's had a mask on, and then maybe they've removed it or pulled it down for some reason, and you realize there's so much more to their facial expressions and to who they are? There is something, I think, really sinister about all of this mask wearing. And now we're seeing, I cannot believe it, that we are seeing people that I would think would be freedom-loving people that are buying into this whole mask wearing thing. And I'm seeing now, there was a report that said that actually the mask can stop the virus. And it's just not true unless you have an N95, and that even won't stop all of that, because the virus and the particles are so small that a mask will not stop that. Now, granted, if you sneeze or cough, it would stop those droplets. But if somebody is really concerned about that, the mask that they have chosen to wear would stop that. And so there, I think, is something really, you know, it's kind of dehumanizing people. And I'm really sad about that, Steve.
Yeah, I've recently seen a picture of a drywaller using the N95 mask. And he removes the mask, and you can see everywhere behind where the mask was covering, his face is still coated because the particles of the drywall dust, measured in microns, are so small. And yet the thing goes out of its way to show that, okay, the drywall dust is so many microns, the virus is so many fewer microns, so how could this mask possibly be doing any good? But it, like you just said, for the outgoing, the sneeze, the cough, all right, so, you know, you probably can't argue that aspect of it.
True. But I tell you, this whole mandatory mask wearing is really concerning me. And a couple of things. This is from Westward. Patty found this, that Colorado has the second most virus restrictions. It says, for months, Governor Jared Polis and other state officials have been accused of picking winners and losers through public health orders announced to stop the spread of COVID-19. Polis' decision to shut down bars and clubs statewide mere weeks after their limited reopenings has renewed that criticism. And it's likely to continue with news that he's now extended Colorado's emergency order to 30 days from July 6th. It says, now comes more fuel for the fire. A just-released study that found Colorado has the second most COVID-19 rules among the 50 states and the District of Columbia. The analysis by the Wallet Hub website has some built-in limitations. States are adjusting their policies on a daily or even hourly basis, with hotspots such as Florida and Texas among those putting new practices into place. As a result, any of these comparisons are a snapshot based on this case on data available as of 12:30 Eastern Time on July 6th. And I have felt this. You know, Colorado used to be this state of rugged individualism. People flocked here because of that rugged individualism of Colorado. And I've felt that we've had, you know, all of these restrictions. But this report really shows that we are among the most unfree states in the country right now. And it's not just the COVID-19 thing. When we see what's coming out of the legislature, when we see that Governor Polis has issued over 100 executive orders, none of these are giving people more freedom. It's more and more restrictions on our life, Steve.
Yeah, no debate about it. There is a cost from going red to blue. And are we purple or are we blue now? What are we, solidly blue?
Well, we are, as far as state government is. Yeah. And actually in our local governments as well, we are moving to, more Democrat policies. And the Democrat Party of today, Steve, is not the Democrat Party of JFK. You know, JFK actually advocated for lower taxes. And so this party is no longer the party of JFK. It is really one that picks winners and losers, the elites, and then there's the poor, the homeless that they manipulate. But I don't think they really care about, the most vulnerable, but they use the most vulnerable or the narratives of the most vulnerable to push for their agendas. But what we have is this big assault on the middle class, the working middle class. And, that is somebody that can actually go out and create a business, go to work, take care of themselves, is a threat to elites that want to control them, Steve.
Part of the mastery or the artistry of being a magician is to do things on the stage while you're performing that make people look one place while you're doing something else somewhere else. And I think that's a great illustration as to what's going on here with the edict or the comments made. Again, I think we attribute it to Rahm Emanuel, never let a good crisis go to waste. And they're becoming masters.
Oh, that is for sure. And that's why we continue to shed light on it. I am a bit concerned that we are not having our Republicans step up to the plate and stand for freedom. And we're seeing that, I got to find it here, that actually we're seeing that Republicans that are stepping forward and encouraging all of this mask wearing. I've been very shocked on Fox News to see the hosts and doing these little PSAs on the mask wearing, because I really feel that a lot of this is really more of a submission kind of a thing versus really protecting people. But yet the mainstream media has people so scared to death, particularly if they have an underlying condition, that we in essence are just throwing our civil rights into the laps of these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that really want to take away our rights. And I'm just really, really concerned about it, Steve.
Well, again, I always try to bring some humor to the table. Back to your mask situation. Was it back in March when this thing was fairly starting to pick up speed? Someone's comment, in all my days, I never thought my bank would require me to wear a mask to come in.
True that. I know. All this stuff within the last 3 months, it's amazing. But let's go to break, because I want to talk with John Kellner regarding this increase in crime in these major cities. And Patty did some research on this, on the number of years that these cities have been under Democrat control. But before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners. And today is Wednesday, so it's Wings Day. All the wings you can eat for $15.99. They've got a great happy hour Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. They have half-off select appetizers, and they have specials on different beers and beverages. There's 5 Hooters locations: Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. It's a great time to just sit out on the patio and meet friends and have some great food and drinks. So be sure to go to order.hooters.com for more information. That's order.hooters.com. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with John Kellner.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter, and we'd appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like. On the line with me is John Kellner. He is a candidate for district attorney for Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. And our community safety is so very important. And Patty had found a recent piece in The Federalist that said shootings and killings are surging in Democrat-run cities across the country. And many of these cities have been under Democrat control for many, many years. Denver since 1963, Atlanta since 1879, Chicago since 1931, Baltimore 1967, Boston 1930, Portland 1957. My friends, do you see a trend? And so, John Kellner, I know that you are watching this trend regarding an increase in crime. And we're seeing this, shootings and killings are surging in these Democrat cities across the country. Can you speak to that, John Kellner?
Well, I can't speak to all the cities across the country where crime is surging, but I can certainly talk about what's happening in our backyard in the 18th Judicial District. What we're seeing right now in Aurora is really disturbing in terms of crime going up in the wrong direction here. So what we're seeing in Aurora, I mean, just in this last week, we've had three murders altogether for the year, 22 murders in the city of Aurora. I mean, that's an end-of-year statistic for us, and obviously we're just halfway through. Many years we end up with 24, that sort of number, which is tragic in and of itself. But just to see this uptick, and I'll tell you that the crazy thing is that it's really within the last month and a half where it's really started to spike in terms of not just murders, but shootings. So just people out and about, trying to enjoy their lives, being shot at, not always being hit, thankfully. But the crime numbers are definitely ticking in the wrong direction.
Well, and this is all happening at the same time where we're seeing this assault on police as far as defunding the police. Just this last week, and we talked about it yesterday, that I think it was Substation 1 in Aurora, that protesters actually chained the doors and chained the from the outside and chained the police officers inside. And then in, quote unquote, the staging area, they found that there were full gas cans of fuel. I mean, this is unprecedented, John Kellner, what's happening right here, as you mentioned, in our backyard.
Well, you're right about that, Kim. I mean, the thing that's really concerning about it is you take District 1, and this happened last Friday, so July 3rd, right before our Independence Day. And to give your listeners some context of where this place is, it's just west of 225 and just north of Children's Hospital. So District 1 substation for about 7 hours on Friday, surrounded by anywhere between 500 and 600 people, according to the Aurora Police Department's interim chief, Vanessa Wilson. And this thing went on for nearly 8 hours before the officers kind of went in and cleared people out. Because I will give APD a lot of credit. I mean, they are at this time trying to give room for people to vent their frustrations and make sure people's First Amendment rights are protected. But, ultimately they had to move in when they saw officer safety concerns, other things like that, because you nailed it. After they cleared some folks out of that area, they found gas cans, homemade weapons staged in the immediate vicinity of District 1. You'd mentioned this too, the doors were chained from the outside. So think about that. The officers are prevented from leaving. New officers are prevented from coming in and getting on their next shift. And to circle back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, that's a whole shift of officers that's not able to go out and serve the community in the same high crime area. I told you just three of those murders that I told you about occurred a few blocks away from this substation. You know, so after about 7 hours, they moved in and they cleared the crowd. I think I even read about how there were, M80-type firecrackers being thrown at some of the police. So definitely not just putting police officers at risk, but certainly the community by preventing them from being able to do their jobs.
Well, and let's explain to our listeners how a police department works. So basically, the city council and the mayor hire the police chief. And so basically, this comes from the elected officials hire the police chief, who then sets the policy for police departments. So where we have, these hot spots throughout the country, many of these places where they're so concerned, or they say they're so concerned about police departments, have been under Democrat rule for many, many years. And I think it's important that people understand that correlation, John.
Well, I do think there's a definite correlation from the policy being set at the top and then, how things are carried out. But getting away from that for a minute, what I think is one of the bigger concerns that I have is that, right now police officers are not just under some literal assault, but there's such a negativity to what they do because of what this terrible man did in Minnesota to George Floyd. And it just set relationships back with the police. I mean, God knows how far. I mean, it's just a terrible situation what we find ourselves in now, where there's so much anger and distrust towards police officers, who by and large are just good people trying to do the right thing to help out their communities. The whole call to defund the police, things like that. And without really having a clear answer about what they want to replace that sort of thing with, it's really disturbing, and it hits at the morale of these police officers, too, who are putting their lives on the line when they go out and do their jobs.
Well, and to do their jobs, it means that our communities are safer, and people cannot actually thrive and prosper. They can't go to their jobs, they can't, take their kids to soccer practice if their communities are not safe. And so being the district attorney is very important as well. And these races, I'm not sure that everyday people just realize how important these DA races are, and it's so important on who is elected. So explain to our listeners why they should vote for you.
So the district attorney, like you said, has an incredible role in people's lives, oftentimes unseen. What the district attorney does is sets the tone and the policy for how we seek justice in your name. And, it's not just things like we're going to put bad guys in jail or in prison who deserve to go there, who are a repeated menace to society. But we do things like seek rehabilitation efforts to try and prevent people from escalating into more extensive crime. We run programs like problem-solving courts and diversion, all these things that are aimed at trying to weed out low-level offenders and never get them to come back into the system again. But you have to have a district attorney who's knowledgeable and capable of handling the toughest and most difficult and most challenging cases that you're going to see in your community. I mean, one of the terrible claims to fame for Aurora, of course, is the Aurora theater shooting. You have to have experienced prosecutors who can look the victims of cases like that in the eye and say, I've tried cases like this before. I have tried murder cases. I know what it takes to seek justice, and I will seek justice for your loved one who was injured or killed. The Democrats have nominated my opponent, Amy Padden, who from what I can tell has never even successfully prosecuted a single felony trial. Now, I prosecuted over 15 murder cases alone to show you just a clear distinction. And what I worry about and what people need to think about is, how does that person who's never prosecuted or successfully prosecuted a felony trial look in the eyes of a victim and say, with any sort of sincerity or authenticity, that I will seek justice for you? What kind of confidence does that give people in their government? So the difference between us could not be more clear going into this November election. For any of your listeners who want to get some more information about me, it's www.johnkellner.com. We're going to need all the support we can get going into November.
Again, that's johnkellner.com. And John, we'll continue to have these conversations because they are so important. So thank you for stepping up, and we'll talk to you here in a few weeks.
Thank you, Kim, and thanks for always shining a light on how important these races are.
Most definitely. And Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, top of the morning to you.
Well, good morning to you as well, Kim.
What is going on?
Well, yesterday wasn't a gold star day in the market by any means. The Dow was down most of the day, and then at the end of the day, it took a pretty good nosedive, and we ended up down about 400 points overall. But with the big rally that we've had since the bottom in March, it's got to be expected to see some type of a pullback. And, Kim, the NASDAQ also came down about 90 points, which it looks more extended than the Dow, S&P, the other indexes, because we've had an awful lot of tech stocks, also a lot of biotech stocks that have done very, very well. And a lot of those are listed on the NASDAQ. So, for example, Biogen is a biotech stock, Kim. They've got something going for Alzheimer's disease, and I think that stock looks to be up about 7% this morning. And Joe Biden is apparently going to be their biggest customer, from what I hear.
Did you just say that?
Yeah, but oh. if he heard me, he won't remember tomorrow, so we're okay.
Okay. So just a quick question here. We have just a couple of minutes. So, for example, you talked about NASDAQ, that it may be a little overextended. So should somebody sit down and, you know, say if their plan, they have a certain allocation that they want, stocks, bonds, whatever, is it good to tweak when something's getting extended like that and maybe bring those allocations back into a better ratio?
That's a great question, Kim, and I think it is, but you bring up a great point. A lot of automatic type systems will rebalance once a quarter, once a month, once a year, just kind of automatically. And I think that could be a little bit haphazard. When a certain sector gets some strength going, it might actually go quite a ways before it gets extended or run too high, and you don't want to be cutting your winners off at the knees by just rebalancing brainlessly, I would say, once a year, once a quarter. I think a better way is to kind of take a look and rebalance when you need to, when something really has gotten out of whack, and that way you're kind of peeling back the things that are truly, you know, way up there, and maybe you get to put some into the things that are truly cheap. So I always think watching it and making the adjustments based on where the investments actually are rather than on just a set time scale is a better way to go, but it takes a little bit more effort too.
Well, and so if you'd like to do that, give Jason McBride a call over at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
And we'll be right back with Sally Pipes.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, KimMunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And we'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like. On the line with me is Sally Pipes. She is President, CEO, and Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Pacific Research Institute, a San Francisco-based think tank founded in 1979. Sally Pipes, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I have been watching you for many years, and so it's so exciting to get to finally visit with you. And you have been very busy. There's a lot going on out there, and there's a couple of different things that I'd like to ask you about. The first is you had done an op-ed on June 29th that says that Trump is not giving up on an Obamacare repeal. Tell us about that, Sally Pipes.
Right. Well, so as you know, the Affordable Care Act was signed into law by President Obama March 23rd, 2010. So this March it turned 10 years old. There have been a number of court cases trying to overturn Obamacare. It hasn't done what President Obama had hoped. Very high premiums, very high deductibles, very low enrollment, anything. So it started first in June of 2012. There was a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Unfortunately, Justice Roberts ruled that the Obamacare could stand because the individual mandate could survive under the Congress's power to tax. So that was the first. And then in 2015, there was another attempt in the Supreme Court to overturn Obamacare, and that did not pass either. So here we are now in 2020, and the Supreme Court agreed in March that they would take up the case of Obamacare again because the individual mandate had been invalidated under the law as of January 2019. It was part of the Jobs and Tax Cut bill that was signed in December of 2017. And so a number of states' attorneys general said that because the individual mandate had been invalidated, the whole law was unconstitutional. Judge O'Connor in the Texas court ruled that was correct, but it went to the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Fifth Circuit. They said, yes, the individual mandate is unconstitutional, but we need to send it back to the lower court to get some further information. In the meantime, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed, as I said in March, to take the case. The Trump administration filed its brief in support of the 18 states petitioning the overturning of Obamacare. They filed that in June of this year. It looks like the Supreme Court is going to have hearings on the law on Obamacare in the fall. And, of course, there won't be a decision by the court until probably June of 2021. So, you know, it's still a long way off. And when you hear progressives say, well, Trump, they're going to overturn Obamacare immediately, it can't happen until well at the election, as you know, is in November, and this would be next spring. Secretary Azar has said there's not going to be a new health care plan from the Trump administration prior to the SCOTUS decision. So that's,
you know, Sally, it is a lot to take in. But I talk to everyday hardworking people that are very frustrated with what you just mentioned, was high premiums and high deductibles. And they say, you know, it's not enough for us to say, oh, we need to get government out of health care. Oh, we need a free market solution. Everyday hardworking people want a real solution to this instead of just platitudes. And I think it is important for President Trump to address this. It sounds like that's not going to happen this election cycle, though. What's your comments?
Well, I mean, I think we've been hoping, the president has said many times, I'm going to have the best, you know, plan coming out. We haven't, you know, but it never seemed to appear. One of the things that worries me about President Trump and the election campaign going on right now, he hasn't really focused on what his plan is for a variety of things, whether it's the environment, a free college education, health care. And I really wish that he would do something. I mean, many of us in the think tank movement have come up with plans to repeal and replace Obamacare with a plan that would, you know, give people the opportunity to have different types of health care and changes that need to be made. Under the law this year, 2020, the average individual premium is $456 a month. And so, you know, when you take that combined with about $500 a month in a deductible, because they're over $5,000 for an individual, many people, if you didn't get a subsidy under Obamacare, which was between 138% and 400% of the federal poverty level, many people couldn't afford that coverage. So we only have about, you know, 8 million under Obamacare, and 2% of the people dropped out that were not getting subsidies because it was just too expensive. So we need to have many different types of health care plans for the American people, whether it's short-term limited duration plans, whether it's fee-for-service, whether it's managed care, and then we have Medicaid for our low-income people earning below 138% of the federal poverty level. We have Medicare that's available for people 65 and over. We have health savings accounts, which about 22 million Americans now have, which puts people in charge of their health care. We have under the president's executive order, we now have health reimbursement accounts where employers can give the employee the money to get their own kind of coverage in the individual market. So we need a lot of different types of plans, because the American people like to have options, and competition will lower prices. So, you know, I mean, one of the biggest things that needs to be done is to change the tax code so that individuals can get their health care tax-free in the same way that 160 million Americans who have employer-sponsored insurance get their health care coverage pre-tax. But if you lose your job or quit your job, you don't. And so we need to level that playing field to give people, individuals, the same incentive to get coverage.
Well, Sally Pipes, it seems to me that if somebody could just pay like a fee for service and then have something like catastrophic, that would be a really good idea. But that seems like that's not possible right now. How could we get to that?
Well, we do. I mean, if you look at under the law, we have health savings accounts. As I say, 22 million people have HSAs. A number of companies are now offering them because it puts doctors and patients in charge of their health care. You put away each month in your savings account, in your HSA, a certain dollar amount, whether individual or family, there's a limit. And then you have to combine that with a high deductible insurance plan. And so, you know, I mean, these are terrific. I think one of the things that I recommend is that people should be able to put more money away each month into their HSA, because then it would even be more useful. Allow people over 65 to continue to contribute to their HSA if they can and they want to. And the third thing would be to allow people to use money in their HSA to help with the cost of their premium, if they need help with the cost of the premium. So HSAs are really a terrific idea, along with the health reimbursement account, which would start to take away the whole people being tied to their employer, and because a lot of people are afraid to leave their job because they feel that they might not be able to get affordable coverage. So those are some of the things. The HSA is really a terrific idea. And as I say, they've become increasingly popular, and a number of employers are now offering them. So, but we should be able to put, people should be able to put more money away in their HSA rather than being subject to the I think it's $13,000 for a family and about, you know, $6,000 for an individual.
Yeah, it's really tough on everyday hardworking families with these kinds of deductibles and premiums. What about bringing healthcare costs down? How could we do that, Sally Pipes?
Well, we can bring the cost of healthcare down if we have more competition, more players offering coverage, and getting rid of the expensive mandate that every insurer has to provide in a coverage plan. If most states have about 40 to 45 mandates, which it might be you know, hair prostheses, it might be alcohol rehabilitation, all of these things that add between, you know, up to 20 to 50% to the cost of a premium. And then under Obamacare, under the plans in the exchanges, whether it's healthcare.gov or the state exchanges such as Covered California, there are 10 essential health benefits that have to be provided as well, including, you know, things like training if you're, you know, having a baby, maternity training, all of these kinds of things that add to the cost. Now, I may want a healthcare plan that offers alcohol rehabilitation, but you may not. But why should you have to subsidize me? Let's let people get the kind of coverage that suits their needs and not mandate. The mandates, we got rid of so many of these mandates. People should be able to get a plan that has mandates, certain mandates, if that's what they want. But they shouldn't be forced to pay for other people. Like under the 10 essential benefit, health benefits, there's pediatric dental care, substance abuse. But, you know, you may not want that. I may not want it. But by providing these benefits, the costs are passed on to the consumer in terms of much higher premiums. So we can reduce costs by reducing mandates. The other issue is guaranteed issue and community rating requirements that contribute to higher premiums, because under the law, an insurer cannot charge an older enrollee more than three times as much as younger ones. So, you know, younger people use less health care. And so under the community rating, everybody has to be accepted and can't charge, as I say, more than three times. An older person more than three times what you charge a younger person. So these are the kinds of things that could reduce the cost of healthcare. And if there weren't so many mandates, I think there'd be many more entrants into the insurance field. But right now we have, you know, the major insurers, but it's very, very difficult for a new startup to come into the business because the chance of making it is low because of all of these rules and restrictions and mandates.
Well, and Sally Pipes, my understanding was that the big insurance companies were at the table on this whole Obamacare thing. And just what you mentioned is big business can get in bed with government that then prevents, you know, a new upstart, you know, somebody coming in with a new creative idea, which could bring costs down. And it's not just in the healthcare industry. We see that across the spectrum where big business can use big government. They like each other so that they can control the market. Your quick comment on that, and then we'll go to break.
Right. Well, I think, you know, one of the things was that, you know, President Obama said he would, you know, Obamacare would be not be a single payer Medicare for all. I always felt that his long-term goal was to, of course, show that Obamacare didn't work. Therefore, we need Medicare for all or single payer. Bernie Sanders has been pushing for that for many years. I think Joe Biden, he has a stepping stone approach with a public option to single payer. But there's a lot of exciting things that have happened with the coronavirus and the pandemic. We've seen the movement towards telehealth, which I've been pushing that for years. Scope of practice, allowing nurse practitioners and physician assistants to do a number of things that previously they weren't allowed. Reducing the number of years in medical school from four down to three. Duke, Ohio State, UNC, Chapel Hill are doing that. And then the second is licensure laws, letting docs, you know, if you pass the medical board in Washington State, you can practice in Washington State, but you can't practice in California. Open that up, and we're seeing that in some states so that docs who were qualified in other states can practice across the border as long as they've, you know, passed the specific laws and the exam. So these are things that are opening up, that will open up the system more, and we hope that they're going to continue after this pandemic passes.
Well, and there is, I agree, there's some really positive things that have happened with this coronavirus situation. Let's go to break, Sally Pipes. When we come back, you recently had done an opinion piece regarding the coronavirus lockdown, how many harmed by disruption to routine medical care. So this is Kim Munson. It's the Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back with Sally Pipes.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there, as well as you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. We would appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like. We have all kinds of great information. On the line with me is Sally Pipes. She's the president and CEO and Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Policy at the Pacific Research Institute, which is a San Francisco-based think tank founded in 1979. And she recently had an opinion piece where she talked about the coronavirus lockdown, how many were harmed by the disruption to their lack of routine medical care. So, Sally Pipes, tell us a bit about this.
Well, I mean, this has been a huge, the mainstream media and a lot of the very liberal politicians, you know, have been pushing the lockdown, social distancing, all of the things that have been going on, which is the coronavirus is serious and it's a terrible thing. But on the other hand, people have become so petrified that they aren't going to get to go to the regular doctor to get the kind of treatments that they should be getting. About 600 doctors wrote a letter to President Trump saying that 150,000 patients have had their cancer go undetected during the lockdown, and many more have foregone treatment for conditions that could lead to heart attack or stroke. So, you know, these are things that, I mean, people are just afraid. In the meantime, a lot of the docs, the primary care docs, and some specialists are really having a hard time, you know, meeting their payroll and covering their expenses because people aren't going to the doctor. And in the Kaiser Family Foundation poll, they found that nearly 50% of either themselves or someone in their family had delayed care. And so, I mean, even Rush Limbaugh on his show said that, you know, a couple of times that his, you know, he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, that his treatments had been postponed. This is, you know, this is very, very important. You have to weigh, you know, the fact that if you don't detect cancer early or heart or stroke issues, you know, it's very harmful to your long-term health. I know that in the UK, under the National Health Service, which covers 90% of Brits, well, it covers 100% of Brits, actually, 90% use it, 10% use private care. But they now say that the waiting time for treatment in the UK under the National Health Service, they have 10 million people on that waiting list. And in British Columbia, where I'm from, where Canada has a single-payer, no-private-coverage plan, the Minister of Health, Mr. Dick, said that they've added 30,000 people in B.C. to the waiting list, and there are already 63,000 people in the province on the waiting list. So the delay there will be up to 2 years to get treatment. So, you know, if you have cancer or you need a cancer-type surgery or things, these delays, which are just absolutely, you know, unbelievable, and we have to think about, the number of people that are delaying this treatment. But we can see every day in the mainstream media that people are delaying care. And it's, we have a lot of people who have the coronavirus, but the death rate is falling in this country. As Mr. Fauci said just today, that the average age of people coming down with the COVID is 15 years younger than it was, you know, 3 months ago, when most of the people contacting the coronavirus were, you know, older people over age 60. So we really need to get people to, you know, take care of their regular health and book their appointments. And particularly if you have cancer and you need chemotherapy or you think you might have cancer, let's get it diagnosed and not give this stuff up. Cigna Health said they've seen a 35% drop in their claims for atrial fibrillation just under the COVID. And this can, you know, atrial fibrillation, AFib as they call it, can lead to heart failure and stroke. And they also had a 28% decrease in claims for epilepsy and seizures, 13% decrease in claims for appendicitis. So people have been scared, you know, to take care of their own health care because they're afraid of getting the coronavirus.
So that's really been a disservice, I think, by the National Institute of Health and also by Dr. Fauci. He seemed just so tunnel vision on this coronavirus and didn't really talk about, you know, the other extenuating consequences that could occur. Now, I early on, you know, we didn't know what was going on. Everybody's trying to figure it out. But as time has gone on, we have learned so much more about it. We've learned that there's treatments. We've, you know, learned that getting kind of the herd immunity is a good thing. So I can't quite understand a tunnel vision by some of these quote-unquote experts.
Well, exactly. I mean, the public health officials have been totally tunnel vision. They say, you need to be locked down until we get a vaccine approved. I mean, that may be at the end of the year. It might be early next year. There's so many things we don't know about this virus. How long have you had if a vaccine is proved to work? How long will it be effective? I mean, is it effective on older people and younger people at the same rate? But they have scared people to death, these public health officials like Dr. Fauci. In California, we have a public health official that Dr. Farrar, she's a sociologist, not a medical doctor. But, you know, these people are totally frightened. And then, meanwhile, the economy, the number of people who've lost their jobs, the rate of unemployment is so high, it's going to take quite a long time to get this country back. In February, the American economy was going gangbusters. And now we've seen, with the job loss, with people, you know, now with under the CARES Act, people that lost their job were eligible to an additional $600 a week unemployment insurance. And so now, and that ends July 31st, but a number of people, when restaurants reopened, people said they didn't want to go back to work because they were making more money on the unemployment insurance, the $600 a week plus their own state unemployment insurance. So, you know, we have to get the economy back on track. That's what makes this country go. And instead, we're focused totally on a pandemic that, you know, as I say, 42% of the people who have got the COVID are older people in nursing homes. Actually, in Canada, it's 83%. So let's, you know, get back to, in the meantime, we're seeing, you know, in certain states, California in particular, that when the number of cases have gone up among young people, fewer, lower deaths, but they've shut down the restaurants again, the bars, the theaters, everything. Well, people that work in these fields have, you know, how can they survive if they can't, you know, work and be productive members of our society? We're moving to an entitlement society, which will be a disaster for this country.
Oh, it will be a disaster, that's for sure. And there's such dignity in work. But I've heard stories just like you mentioned that there's different businesses that have wanted to open up and their employees have said, oh, I make more money, you know, taking unemployment right now. And so the incentives have gotten out of whack on that, and we need to get that walked back. One other thing, Sally, we've got about 3 minutes, and that is stories that I have heard of loved ones dying alone. And we've shared this story out here in Colorado that 40-year-old Elizabeth Ryder died after 20 days in the hospital without getting to see her family. And they actually thought they were going to bring her home, and she went into cardiac arrest and passed on. But the loneliness that is occurring in these hospitals and these nursing homes, I've heard stories where elderly people can't understand why their family's not coming to visit them. There's something really cruel about this. Sally, what's your thoughts?
Well, I absolutely believe it. It is very, very, very cruel, and people, you know, are, as you say, dying alone in nursing homes, in hospitals. And, you know, the family is such an important part of getting better. Not only that, we're seeing people, you know, the use of opioids, of drugs, is up under the COVID. When people are alone, they start, and they're not going to work. The other thing is that I think a lot of the people who are in the protest movement, you know, are people who normally would be at work and not out there protesting. And then we're seeing alcohol use up. And we're seeing, as many doctors have said, mental health issues, suicides, because people are alone. They'd be, you know, when you think about the shutdowns almost 4 months ago, if you're all alone, I mean, it's very disconcerting. And particularly if you're older and in a nursing home, where, as I say, we've seen 42-43% of the deaths occur. If you can't see your family, or if you have some other comorbidity issues like dementia, Alzheimer's, how people don't see the they just die of loneliness. And this is really being, a terrible thing. You can do testing. You know, if you do testing and you're fine, you should be able to go and see your mother or your father in a nursing home if you're COVID-free. I know the nursing homes are all paranoid, but I think a lot of this is being generated by the people like Governor Cuomo in New York, and people are scared. But even people that, could go back to work, we've seen some of the poll numbers, people are so afraid to go back to their office or to go on the subway, to take the subway or the train to work, because they've been inundated with horror and fear stories.
Yeah, there's something really cruel about that. Sally Pipes, we are out of time. How can people find all of your opinion pieces and your books? What would be the best way to do that?
Well, my latest book, False Premise, False Promise, The Disastrous Reality of Medicare for All, published by Encounter Books, is available on Amazon.com. And all of my op-eds are on our website, www.pacificresearch.org.
That's pacificresearch.org. Sally Pipes, thank you so much, and we'll have to get you on again because you are really on it regarding all of this healthcare stuff. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Kim. It's been a delight, and I look forward to doing it again. Thanks.
And our quote for today is from Mother Teresa. She said, "Let us touch the dying, the poor, the lonely, and the unwanted according to the graces we have received, and let us not be ashamed or slow to do the humble work." So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.